Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, and thanks for tuning in to Inside Scoop Live. I'm your host, Juanita Watson, and joining me today for his third visit to the program is author Lee Edward Foti. Lee is the author and illustrator of The Chronicles of Kendra Candlestar. It's an award-winning trilogy of children's books that include The Box of Whispers, The Door to Unger, and now his new installment, The Shard from Grief. Growing up on a farm, Lee was subjected to various chores, such as cleaning up after chickens, pigs, geese, and younger siblings. He eventually flew the coop and is now most pleased to have the official title as Chronicler of the Adventures of Kendra Candlestar. When he is not writing, Mr. Wiz, as he is so often called, spends his time speaking at schools or helping kids sculpt their own stories through creative writing workshops, which he has taught in Canada, the U.S., England, and Korea. Lee enjoys traveling and especially exploring castles, mazes, tombs, and temples around the world, not to mention tiny places hidden between the cracks of here and there. His book's website is kendracandlestar.com, and his personal website is leefoti.com. So that said, welcome back to the program, Lee.
Thanks so much, Juanita. Good to be here.
Oh, wonderful. So you have authored and illustrated this entire series. I mean, it's most impressive, but I'm really interested in hearing the story of how you actually started, and if this is true that you illustrated and wrote your first book when you were six?
Oh, for sure. I was always a writer. The second I could pick up a crayon, I wanted to be a writer. But when I was really little, I actually didn't understand that you could just write a story. For some reason in my head, I thought if you wrote a story, it had to be in book form. So I actually didn't write stories. I wrote books. And, of course, I grew up, you know, before we had computers, so my books were all handmade. And they were, oh, a little rough around the edges. I would tie them together with yarn, and, you know, I would do them in notebooks and glue illustrations on the front. And I had my own little bookmaking factory, but, you know, and they even had copyright pages. I didn't even know when I was really young, I didn't even know what a copyright page was, except that a book had one.
Mm-hmm.
So I would, you know, just look in real books and try to emulate what they were doing. So my first book that I remember writing was about a farm, because I grew up on a farm, but it was really, yeah, it was really quite rough. I remember it was written in crayons.
That is so funny. Do you still have any of those books?
Oh, I have some of them for sure. Unfortunately, I mean, I wrote so many books, and unfortunately some of them have disappeared, which is a little heartbreaking. But I have a few of them, and I teach creative writing to kids now, so every now and then I will pull one out, but I tend to be a little nervous about that because they're getting quite delicate and frayed.
I'm sure.
I definitely have taken pictures of them, and I definitely, like, every now and then throw up the covers of them when I go around to schools and things, because I think it's neat for kids to see that it was something I was always passionate about. And I also always laugh because I show this one picture that I did of a book when I was about 9 or 10, and it's of this giant dragon blowing fire down at these little animals, and it's a stormy night.
Mm-hmm.
And that picture always amuses me because that's pretty much what I write now.
It's what you write now. And
there's not a lot of difference.
That's so funny, and it's interesting because kids can relate to that. You know, it's so what kids are into, it seems, is just timeless.
Yeah, I agree. And I just like to think that, you know, I always say this to children as well, because I like to think that some of my really greatest ideas were when I was 10.
Mm.
And I actually get inspiration from those old stories. Now, they may not be the best written, and they're certainly not the best produced, but some of the, just the nuggets of the creativity that are contained within those stories, they're so fresh, you know, so refreshing,
yeah.
You know. So I think I always try to tell kids, like, don't think that you can't write now. You might have some of the best ideas you ever have.
That's fantastic. So did you ever take a break from writing, or have you been writing all along?
No, I definitely took a break. Growing up on a farm, you know, my parents, it wasn't that they were unsupportive, but they just, you know, we grew up in a rural community.
There was other things to do.
Yeah, and, you know, it sounds cliche, but, you know, my father was a farmer, his father was a farmer, and
mm-hmm.
I was supposed to be a farmer. So my parents, they would always tell me, you know, I would always say, I'm going to be a writer. And they're like, no, you're not. and I would say, why not? And they're like, well, if you want to, you know, because that's not a job. You know, a job is when you sweat and when you get dirty. And so, you know, famously, being a writer or working in the arts isn't lucrative. So I think there was a time when I was in university, I was struggling, I didn't know what to do with my life. And I did for a while abandon the idea that I could be a writer. Mm. I was always writing, but I became very secretive about it.
Mm.
And eventually I became a graphic designer. And I was working for this big corporation, but I was running home every night to write furiously. So, I soon became too busy to have a job. So thankfully everything has gone well for me, and now I write, illustrate, and I speak full-time to kids.
You are doing that full-time. That's fantastic. Well, what is the writing and illustrating process like for you right now? Are you creating the story first, then the illustrations, or how is that working?
It works quite differently for me, I think, compared to other authors because I illustrate.
Mm-hmm.
So for me, it always starts with pictures. That's how I get my ideas out. It's almost like doodling.
Mm.
So certainly the first tender of book, The Box of Whispers, began completely by accident because I've probably told the story before. I've told it thousands of times. I'd painted this picture and then was inspired by the picture to begin writing the story. But now with the newer books in the series, I know kind of where I'm going, but I always start with drawing first. It seems to be the thing that kind of gets the ball rolling down the hill.
Mm.
And I'm working on the fourth Kendra book right now. I've just started, and I've started like I always do now. I just get out my sketchbook. I take lots of notes. I'm sketching characters and different ideas, and I may not even know what that character might do.
Yeah.
But there's something about it that's interesting, and I'm working out things in my head as I'm doing it.
That's a real organic experience for you.
Yes, it is. You know, it's kind of funny because it is, and then I'm also very highly organized in terms of plotting, so, I mean, the third book, Shards and Greaves, being the third book in the series, there have been some layers built up. So I had this enormous plot tree taped along the wall of my studio, which I could write on and change things, and then I would make it, make a new version. And so it does begin quite organic, and then it gets quite detailed.
Mm-hmm.
But
where did
is so important to the process.
Oh, clearly, clearly. Well, where did the original idea for Kendra Candlestar come from?
Well, the original painting was just, I had already written another book that had been published, and I was trying to clear my palette. You know what I mean? Like,
mm-hmm.
I always like to do that between books. I like to try and do paint something that has nothing to do with anything, or write something that has nothing to do with anything, just to clear my brain and do a reset.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what I was doing at this moment. I painted this picture of these tiny characters sneaking past this big dragon, and you could see the whole snout of the dragon. You can see his treasure in the background. And the characters were slightly different. There was a character holding this box of whispers, but it wasn't Kendra. It was this rabbit.
Oh, wow.
And she had these really long ears. And, you know, whenever I finish a painting, I hang it on my studio wall, and I just leave it there for a while, sometimes weeks, sometimes months, just to see if I still like it. You know, because sometimes after a while, I'm like, oh, that didn't work.
Mm-hmm.
But with this painting, I found that I was writing the story in my head. So I finally just decided to start writing it down.
Mm-hmm.
And now we'll talk about organic, because that was a rough, very haphazard way to approach the story, because instead of plotting something out, I just began writing. And there was a good component to that, because there was a lot of originality and creativity in it. It just took me 3 years. But, you know, I started with those characters that were in that original painting, and it was the rabbit, Luca Longyears. That was the star of the show.
And so you really, from the get-go, this was not intended to be the in-depth project then that it has become.
Oh, not at all. I had a lot of fun doing The Box of Whispers. It did take me a long time to work it out because I did it in such a haphazard way, like I say.
Mm-hmm.
But I really enjoyed the book. The characters were really strong, and I had a great response from the readers. Mm-hmm. And they loved it. It won a few awards. It was nominated for a couple of awards. And so I felt that it was a land I could revisit,
mm-hmm.
and I felt that kids were emailing me and asking me what happens next and all of these things. And I had written the book. By the time I'd gotten to the end of it, I thought, you know, maybe one day I'll write a sequel. And with the fan response and everything, I thought maybe it was something I could take on. And then, of course, the most important thing happened, which was I had an idea.
Mm-hmm.
And once I had that idea for the second book, I knew that this was going to be something I was going to continue and develop into a series. And so then I became much more better at my process.
At the process. Well, you're on to something clearly. I mean, the awards that you've won several Mom's Choice Awards. You've been a finalist in the USA Book News Awards and many recommendations from the Canadian Toy Testing Council. I mean, that is amazingly.
Oh, thank you. Well, I'm pretty, you know, for me, to be honest, I love all those. I mean, I'd be lying if I said I didn't like accolades, but for me, the best is getting the response from the kids. So I was recently at an event down in a town near Seattle at a bookstore, and we had an open Een house. When Een's, of course, that's the land of Een where Kendra lived. So this bookstore had kind of tried to create a mini land of Een in their store, and I had never been to the store, but there's a lot of kids who are fans of my books in that neighborhood, and so it was great for me because kids were walking into the store dressed as Kendra.
Oh, wow.
So it was pretty neat, and, you know, one little girl dressed, she looked just like Kendra. She had the braids and the cape and her robe and everything, and it was just fantastic. So when I see things like that, that is really, I don't know how to put it into words. It's just so compelling because, you know, I've created this character that's now been reincarnated in a Halloween costume, so to speak.
Yeah.
So it's
neat. Oh, it means so much to kids. Oh, how rewarding. I mean, that's right there. It just keeps you going.
Yeah, that is true. That's the fuel.
Mm-hmm. Clearly. Well, you've come out with your newest book, The Shard from Grieve, but I'd love for you just to give our audience a bit of a recap of book one and two.
Sure. In book one, that's where we're introduced to Kendra, and she lives in this mythical land of Een, tucked between the cracks of here and there, and the Eens are elf-like characters. They're quite small. They are, you know, very magical, mythical, and somewhat mysterious race of people. And they have this box of whispers which guards all their secrets. It's been guarding all their secrets for 1,000 years. It absorbs secrets. But, of course, at the beginning of the book, the box gets stolen. And this begins Kendra's journey. She is one of the characters chosen to go search for the box. And, of course, along the way, she discovers her own secrets inside the box and her journey becomes a really personal one, and that really sets her up for the rest of these books. I don't want to give away too much.
Don't give away too much.
I will. So the second book is, I call it my plot twist book, because there's a great plot twist in there that the kids relish. And Kendra, what we learn in the first book, that she lives with her uncle Griffin Skitch. Her parents had disappeared, and her brother had disappeared a long time ago. And in the second book, she has a mysterious visitor in the middle of the night that tells her to go seek this door to Unger, and this is going to tell her the truth about what really happened to her family. So she goes and hunts down this fabled door that leads to this maze of monsters, and inside there she does indeed discover a really important truth. And that book really kind of ends on a cliffhanger, and which sets up for the new book, The Shard from Grieve.
Wonderful. It sounds like you are going for a bit of a personal evolution with Kendra.
Oh, for sure. I mean, there's two things in that. I think as a reader, you want to see characters change and grow.
Mm-hmm.
As much as we like to go revisit characters, I think when those characters get their personal boundaries pushed, I think it is ultimately more satisfying. And for the writer, it's more satisfying because I need to see these characters change and do new things. And I'm delighted when I can put my characters in different situations or have them do things that perhaps were unexpected, and that is really the case in this third book. I call this third book The Shard from Grieve. When I was writing it, I called it my perfect storm book.
Great.
Because I wanted Kendra to take this new journey and to not achieve certain things, but try to attain certain things.
Mm.
Not necessarily good things. But in order for her to make decisions, I had to push her into a couple of corners where she would make those decisions.
Mm.
So I've had a lot of readers say they didn't question that she was going to make those decisions, but they were extremely surprised at her behavior in some scenes.
Oh, interesting.
But it does make sense in the context of what's going on around her. She's under stress. There's things happening. There's desires in her heart that are, you know, affecting her mood and her goals. So yeah, it's my perfect storm. I had a lot of fun creating those situations.
So she is really having to confront herself, it sounds like, in this book three.
You know, poor Kendra. When the first book began, she was 11, and now she's 12, and she's gone through a lot of facing herself.
Yeah, right.
But, you know, I like that sort of thing. I think any good character does have to, you know, a climax in a book isn't always about fighting dragons and ogres.
Yeah.
Often in my books it is, but the other side of those climaxes is the emotional climax,
mm-hmm.
or realizations or decisions that characters have to make.
Mm-hmm.
I think any good book is like that. So for Kendra, she really, in this book, I mean, the other way I like to talk about this is a book of battles. There's, you know, the setting that I wanted to create for this book, the centerpiece, is called the Rumble Pit. And it's like this gladiator arena where this wicked, monstrous queen has built this gladiator arena, and she's collected and stolen and captured all of these mythical creatures from around the world, like centaurs and unicorns and things. And she throws them into this Rumble Pit to fight it out just so she can be amused. So there's a real physical battle going on in this book, which for kids, they love that scene because there's lots of, it's not too violent, but there's lots of action and drama going on in these different characters, and some of the characters they know from other books, and they're, you know, it's this big cacophony of action. But really, for me, the writer, the metaphor is the battle of Kendra and what's going on inside of her, and I'm just placing her in this really physical battle, which is, like I say, the bigger one is inside of her.
And do you think that that battle and what's going on with Kendra is really relatable to readers, and that's why you're getting such a great response? I mean, I think it's predominantly girls that's your reading audience. Is that true?
No, that's actually not true at all.
Oh,
I would say it's really 50-50 because, of course, the instinct is to think that it's girls reading my books because Kendra is a girl.
Mm-hmm.
But that is not true. I have tons of boys that absolutely love these books because, you know, there is a girl as the main character, but her best friend is a mouse, he's a boy, and there's Uncle Griffin Skitch, the wizard, and there's
mm-hmm.
the other main character is this ogre-like character called Trugol the Younger.
Mm-hmm.
So there's lots of characters to appeal. This story is very character-driven.
Yeah.
I find that when kids contact me or talk to me about these books, they are always referencing their favorite character. And I find there's boys who email me about these books who are so passionate. They are over-the-top passionate. And not, you know, they never mentioned that they would have liked it better if Kendra was a boy. And I honestly don't think it occurs to them.
Really?
Yeah.
Fascinating.
Now, having said that, I mean, I know the marketplace likes to sometimes really think about, you know, this is a book for girls, this is a book for boys. I teach creative writing to kids, and I throw all kinds of books at my kids to read, and I never try to frame anything
mm-hmm.
in that way to them
mm-hmm.
because I find that every time I do, you know, I'm proved to be wrong.
Doesn't work, right.
Especially boys who are, you know, there are, you know, we like to say that boys don't read and boys don't write, and, you know, but some do, and
yeah.
those boys are generally a little bit more sensitive, and they'll read anything. That's what I was like.
Mm.
So I find that both boys and girls really relate to this book, and I actually think specifically in this book with the gladiator, the Rumble Pit, the boys really love that part.
Oh, I'm sure.
I mean, I think the girls do too, but the boys, of course, you mean, I just mentioned the word Rumble Pit, and
their eyes open.
They're like, hmm.
What is
but
that?
I do think what Kendra, I mean, you know, one of the main things that Kendra wants to do, she's always, well, she's been a kid. And in the world of Ian, once you turn 12, you're allowed to apprentice with a master.
Okay.
And much to Kendra's delight at the beginning of this book, her uncle chooses to train her as a sorceress. And this is something which she hadn't really expected. And she begins to really, you know, she was so excited about this. And her long-lost mom was a famous sorceress. So now she thinks she can walk in her mother's footsteps. And she becomes really desirous to become a great sorceress. And this kind of becomes one of the things that drives her. And, you know, there's this one thing where Kendra is struggling to learn magic, and she's arguing with her uncle, who is now her master. And she says, you know, I just want to be a sorceress.
Mm.
And he says, do you? Or do you just want to be powerful? Because there's a difference.
Mm.
So this is one of the things that she's battling with in the book. And I think, you know, I think whether you're 8 or 88, you can deal with these things. Or you can relate to these things like greed or envy or
yeah.
addiction or all of these things, you know, we all have to make those decisions.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, you know, I'm not sure every, you know, 8-year-old will get the subtext of that in this book, but they'll certainly understand that Kendra has to make decisions. And more importantly, they're certainly going to see the consequences.
Oh, there you go. Well, these are universal themes that you're going for here. And I think that children's books, you know, they sit on children's shelves, get read and reread. So on every read, they will be picking up something different as they're growing and understanding the world around them differently.
that is my hope. And I have to tell you, I'm so delighted when I see a child come into one of my events with a book for me to sign, and it's completely dog-eared, and it looks like it's been through a war. I love that. Sometimes they come in with these pristine copies because they love them, and they've just treated them very well. But I always love the books that come in that look like they've been, you know, thrown under the school bus, because I know the kid has read them, you know, 3 or 4 times. They've read them in the bathtub. You know, they've been shoved into their school bag. So for me, that's it's a great thrill, and I think that's when they start getting the subtext and the other messages.
Mm-hmm. So is The Shard from Grieve, is this your favorite book in the series?
Ooh,
or could you have a favorite book? I mean, these are all your babies, right?
I know, it's like picking my favorite sibling. You know, I often say that the book I'm working on is my favorite. Mm-hmm. So definitely The Shard from Grieve was my favorite because it was the one in my head and it was the one I'm working out. It's still new and fresh to me, and it can be quite frustrating when I'm working on a book, because I was just talking about this with an author friend of mine last night about the process of writing a book and plotting. And it can be so much fun, but so frustrating, because you're trying to chisel away at that stone to find the statue beneath, if you will, as Michelangelo always said, you know, and I like that metaphor. But, and it's new, I don't know how the book's going to end, you know.
And we'll be back with more Inside Scoop Live after these important announcements.
Hi there. Are you looking for new ways to promote your book? Why not consider being interviewed live? With the huge impact internet radio as well as podcasting is making in our society, your voice can now be heard worldwide. Let Juanita at Inside Scoop Live create the necessary steps for you. You will not only receive a web page of your own, but your interview will be available for MP3 download and RSS feed. As well, your interview will be posted on venues such as iTunes, Blog Talk Radio, Podcast Alley, and the Inside Scoop Live blog. Go to InsideScoopLive.com today for more information. Welcome back to Inside Scoop Live. Just to remind you, I'm talking today with Lee Edward Foti. He is the author and illustrator of the Chronicles of Kendra Candlestars book series. It's a children's book series that starts with The Box of Whispers. Book 2 is The Door to Unger, and Lee's new installment, his third book, The Shard from Grieve. All of that, you can find out more information at KendraCandlestar.com.
But now The Shard from Grieve is published, it's out, and I've started working on the fourth book. And I'm starting to find those little nuggets of inspiration in my drawings and in my notes that are making me really delight in Kendra's next adventure. So I don't know. I guess The Shard is still my favorite right now.
Mm-hmm.
But I think naturally it'll move to become the fourth book I'm working on. And then I think years from now I'll be able to look back and kind of know overall maybe which one I really liked. I don't know. It's hard to say.
Yeah.
I know kids definitely gravitate towards, you know, kids like to rank things. And some kids really like The Box of Whispers. Some kids love The Door to Unger because of the plot twist. And, of course, some kids absolutely love Shard because of the, you know, the rebel pit, and there's, you know, this third book, there's so much stuff in it. There's gnome pirates, there's the rebel pit, there's, you know, this dark, mysterious, wizard-like character. There's so much going on, so there's lots of, it's a feast.
Do you see yourself maturing as a writer through the progression of these books?
In some ways I do. I hope I don't mature too much.
Yeah, no.
That would be to Kendra's discredit. I think writing a series, one of the traps for a writer is to somehow stay fresh and to not get stale, and to, it's really, it's an interesting experience for me because I need, like I said, I need to keep fresh. I need to remember what made the first book successful, and I need to not rest on the laurels of that. I need to introduce new things. I love characters. I'm very character-driven, but I'm also hesitant to always just introduce a whole suite of new characters with every book. I like to take the characters I've already developed and develop them further. So, and that's hard too, because kids, especially in children's books, they have their favorite characters, and in some ways they don't want them to change.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, that's part of the fun of being an author, is making, you know, manipulating characters. Truly, I mean, you know, you want to have cliffhangers, you want to endanger those beloved characters, because that's what makes the pages turn.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, so how influential are authors like Lewis and Tolkien to your work?
Well, they're very influential because, as a kid, I grew up before Harry Potter. So for me, those, like, I was desperate to go to the land of Narnia. growing up in a farm, I hated, you know, doing all my chores. I just wanted to be a writer. I was desperate to find the secret door to Narnia.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I would have gone through the wardrobe in a heartbeat. I am Ice Queen or No. So those books were really influential to me. I didn't read Tolkien as a child. It was, you know, a really heavy book. I'm talking about when I was a really young kid.
Mm-hmm.
But there were old cartoons and the paintings and everything that I'd always seen that were so influential and as an artist inspired me. So they were incredibly influential. And the other books that were a big influence on me were the Wizard of Oz books. And if you look at my drawings and you look at those Wizard of Oz books, you can see there's a definite relationship there. And that's how I think about putting books together, is with these big drawings.
Mm, isn't that interesting? So what about the Harry Potter series now? Have you read the whole...
Oh, of course, yeah.
Yeah.
No, I think Harry Potter is great. And as a teacher of writing and reading to kids, you know, I think we're absolutely, you know, indebted to Harry Potter and Rowling for making reading so popular and making reading cool. And it's such a great thing, like, when those books were coming out and they were, like, a new book, Harry Potter book, would come out and outsell the top-grossing movie of that day.
Yeah,
I think that is, you know, who would have said that, you know, 10 years ago or 15 years ago when everyone's always claiming books are going to die, right?
Right.
And this just shows the power of a great story.
Mm.
And I personally have really enjoyed the Harry Potter books. I have a different relationship with them than kids, obviously, because I think when you read a book as a kid, it's just different.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, and my books have also... You know, a lot of people, when, you know, they first see me in books, I'm like, oh, you're Harry Potter. You know, I'm like, well, no. You know, not every fantasy book's Harry Potter, right?
Right.
And what my books have done, and Harry Potter's actually helped Kendra quite a bit, because a lot of younger kids want to read Harry Potter. But Harry Potter sometimes can get, as the books went on, they got a little bit scarier, a little bit darker, and they got a lot longer.
Mm-hmm.
And especially, I live in Canada, and the Canadian editions have no illustrations.
Oh, wow.
So they are tomes. And, you know, my books have been really successful with those kids who want to read that type of adventure that is found in Harry Potter, but they're just not ready for it yet in terms of what they can manage to read and what they might manage to emotionally digest.
Oh, that's a good point. Well, your reading audience is about 8 to 12. Is that right?
Yeah, that's right. But what is interesting is that I found these books have really cast a wide net because they've pulled down a little bit. So I'm not surprised anymore, but when The Box of Whispers came out, I was surprised to go into schools and libraries and see that teachers and parents and librarians were reading them to younger kids.
Mm.
And so I suddenly found that I had this, like, really passionate 6, 7, 8-year-old fan base.
Oh,
I have, I mean, to be honest, most of the kids who contact me are older. They're 8, 9, 10, 11.
Mm-hmm.
But I was surprised to see that I have this undercurrent of kids who are really gravitating towards these books at a younger age because of the illustrations, and the chapters are short, and the characters are so clearly distinct.
Yeah, they're defined, and you're not going into too dark places.
No, I'm not going, I mean, The Shards and Grave is, you know, if you want to use the word dark, it's the darkest of the books,
mm-hmm.
but it's still got nothing on even Harry Potter.
Yeah.
And, you know, I was recently at a book conference, and one of the booksellers was telling me her reaction to the latest book, and she was really impressed because this great, fantastic battle in the rumble pit at the end, she was so impressed that it was so full of action and battling, but there was no gore. And it's, you know, I don't even know if you can really use the word violence.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just painting. I don't even think it's as violent as the battles that you read in Narnia.
Mm-hmm.
But it's full of action and hissing serpents and stomping hooves and, you know, things like this and the clash of swords. But you're right in the middle of it. You're not being, you know, having this... I don't like shock value. I don't like writing for shock. So.
There's such a fine line when you're talking about writing for children. And so are you at all times when you're setting a scene like that, keeping in mind that you just don't want to cross that line?
No, not really. I don't think I think about it that way. I think it's a little bit more natural for me.
Mm-hmm.
Part of it has to do with the fact that my sister is 12 years younger than me. So when I was a teenager, I was telling her stories and being mindful of that.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's just, and now I teach writing and I workshop with so many kids. I think I'm mindful of those things naturally.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think I really think about it. But, you know, I'm a big Star Wars fan, and I didn't grow up with Harry Potter. I grew up with Star Wars.
Mm-hmm.
And I always like to think, when in doubt, I follow the Star Wars model, where there's lots of strange creatures and strange things going on. But generally speaking, You know, the violence is pretty low-key, or the action's pretty low-key. I don't know if you can use the word cartoonish, but it's definitely different from, say, Lord of the Rings, even.
Yeah, absolutely. It's definitely more safe for children. Mm-hmm.
So that is just the type of, I don't know, I always use, you know, I always think of Star Wars when I'm thinking about the tone. Right? So it's just a tone level. So once you get the tone, you're not, you've established, it's like painting. I'll go back to the artist metaphor. I've got my palette, and I'm not going to stray from those colors. And it just wouldn't make sense for there to suddenly be this really incredible bloody scene.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, you know, if kids don't want violence, they think they do, but they just want action.
That's a really good point. And there's so much violence out there already. Why put more out there, right?
Well, I actually teach an entire workshop in which I teach kids how to write a really good battle without being violent.
Really? Well, tell us about some of your workshops. You're the co-founder of the Dream Workshop, a creative writing program for children. So tell us a little bit about the work that you're doing in the form of teaching.
Well, this is a program I had the opportunity to start about 5 or 6 years ago. I was approached by someone who really wanted to develop a creative writing program for kids in which the end goal would be to desktop publish books for them. And I have no formal education in education. But what I do have is a lot of passion for writing and a lot of passion for helping kids write. And, of course, growing up and wanting to be a writer from an early age but not having the tools, facilities, or necessarily the support to do that,
mm-hmm.
it kind of inflamed in me this idea that wouldn't it be great to build an environment, to construct an environment, an emotional space where kids can be encouraged, nurtured, and supported.
Mm-hmm.
And we started with just one class that we taught once a month. And now I live in Vancouver, Canada, so now we teach about, I would say, 10 to 12 workshops in the Vancouver and its satellite cities. And we probably run between 150 and 200 kids through our program a year.
Oh, my gosh. And how many people are working with you?
Yeah, it's no longer me, that's for sure.
Yeah, no kidding.
Yeah, we have about three teachers who are more or less working. You know, I work full-time with this program, and we have, which means I have to squeeze in my writing sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
So busy helping kids write their stories. We have probably about 5 or 6 teachers who are involved, and all of our teachers work in the arts. So they're either performers or published authors themselves or publishers or editors. So they're all people who are working in the field. So we are really bringing real-life working experience to these kids, helping them sculpt their own stories.
Clearly, they're loving it if you're so busy.
Oh, yeah, and, you know, don't get me going. I'll start gushing about my kids' books because I'm like a parent, because some of the work they've done is just incredible, and I'm so, so proud of them. And it just shows me, you know, you build the platform and they will take those steps.
Are you having any showings of these books or doing anything with the public to get that work out there?
Sometimes we do. I had a sneak peek launch of my latest Kendra book, The Shroud from Grief. I had a Kendra Candle Star extravaganza back at the, you know, a sneak peek. It wasn't officially out till very recently, but at the beginning of the summer season, I had a sneak peek party, and I invited the public, and I invited a lot of my students, former students, to come, and we displayed some of the books that they've done because I wanted to celebrate the kids as well. I don't know if you noticed, but the dedication at the front of this latest book is to my students.
Oh, wow.
And I said, because, you know, let me just find it to see what I wrote. Because my kids actually, I workshop all my books with them. So I dedicated this, I said, for all my students who have blessed me with countless stories, now here is one for you. And I really feel that way, that I've been so blessed to hear all of their wonderful and crazy ideas. And I actually had one of my former students, she was 11, pre-read my latest Kendra book and help me with it.
Mm-hmm.
She was always emailing me, so I decided I'd put her to work and give her a job. So she named some of the characters, and she, you know, helped me with one of the backstories for a character.
At 11?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, gosh.
Well, I mean, she's 11, and, you know, you're getting into the tween, right? So
sure.
I'd given her... I'd shown her a picture of one of my characters and given her a list of names, and she said, very politically, that they all sucked. I'm like, all right. So I said, well, you come up with one then. And so she did, and then I sent it to another student, but didn't let him know where it came from, and got him to pick between her name and mine, and he picked her.
Hers.
So I thought, okay, well, this is good. So I had her just work on a few other things and name and provide. It was just someone to bounce ideas off, and
mm-hmm.
being 11, she's pretty much my core audience, and I just also, it was fun for her, I think, and it was fun for me. And
Kids are so smart at that age now.
Yeah, and she's a really great writer herself. I mean, she, you know, so she, it's not like she's uninformed in terms of what makes a good book and things like that. So.
How fun, and what an opportunity for her.
Yeah, I think she really enjoyed it, and she's just a wonderful kid. And I've got so many wonderful kids in my program. And, you know, she was a specific case, but I always am bringing in my new illustrations and drafts of my manuscript and showing them how I work on it. Because obviously, as a teacher, I'm trying to get them to improve their own vocabulary and their own ability to describe. So I'll show them my process and show them, you know, I don't write something perfectly the first time. Here's my first draft. Here's my second draft. And I think it makes it really come alive for them.
Well, you're a real gift for these children, really.
Well, I hope so. I like to feel that they're my gift, so they're a gift to me. So hopefully it goes both ways. It
goes both ways. So what's Goblin Designing 101?
That's my first workshop that I've ever developed. So I've got so many workshops now. I've got, like I said, I've got the Writing Rumble, which is how to write a battle. I've got So You Think You're Really, Really, Really Evil, which is how to make evil characters. And I've got Goblin Designing 101, which is my basic one that I can do with schools all the time. I do it like with 200 kids sometimes at once. It's crazy. And because I'm I've described my, you know, how I work with the drawing first. So I work with them. I draw a character. They shut out the ideas. So I have to draw what they tell me to draw. And they draw along with me, and they all go off on their own tangents. And it's great because you have this room. And like I say, sometimes it might be 200 people drawing all at once. And everyone's shouting their ideas, and everyone's hearing ideas and putting things into their drawing. And at the end, we come out with the creature. I call it Goblin Designing 101, but, I mean, the creature can be, you know, we've drawn some pretty strange things, you know.
I bet you have.
Snakes with 10 eyes and noses and wings and all of this stuff. And at the end, we have the character, and we name it, and we give it a few props. And then they can use that character. They can go back to their classroom with their teacher, and they can write a story based on that character. And it's actually a little bit different because a lot of times, you know, we're really struggling to get kids to write, and sometimes, you know, we use the drawing as a carrot. Like, if you write the story, then you can draw. But I find it's fun to do the reverse, to let them draw, because I find that unlocks the story in them. That's how it works for me, and I find it works that way with a lot of kids as well. And at the end of these presentations and workshops, they're running up to me telling me their story based on their picture. And I'm like, your story's there. Now all you have to do is, you know, put it into words.
I can you know, hearing you speak, I can just feel the energy of those workshops. It must just be so incredible to be there.
Oh, it's thrilling for me, and I always go over time, you know, and I stand at the door of the library or the gym or the auditorium or wherever we are and, you know, demand every kid to show me their drawing.
Yeah.
I just love seeing them, and some of them are so incredible, and,
oh,
and some of them are so funny, and it's just, that is the best part of, you know, of my day.
You know, and for a time where arts are being taken out of the schools, for you to be able to do this just must be so powerful for these children.
I hope so. I mean, I believe in the arts dearly, and I'm glad actually you brought that up because I always felt when I was a kid growing up in a small rural town, and it's probably much, I grew up in Canada, but it's much the same in the U.S., sports is what seems to be the focus at the time. And, of course, I don't have anything against sports. I love sports. I played sports as a kid. But I find that sports have, in school, they have coaches and teams and practices and tournaments. But as writers and artists, we get a pat on the head, and it's a little bit less structured to it. So I guess in my own program, I always say to parents, it's soccer for writers. Like, you're not going to come in and just write a story, and I'm going to pat you on the head and say, well done. I'm going to make you rewrite it. You're going to, you know, think about how you can improve your story. You're going to try different types of writing. So it's great if you love fantasy, but we're going to make you try other things too. And you're going to read different types of books. And at the end, we're going to publish this book for you. There's a, like, that's our tournament. You know, and your book, you know, I think a lot of times when kids first go through the program, they don't really believe us. Or they think it's a vague goal. Like, yeah, you're going to publish a book for me. But once they start seeing the books, they realize, wow, these books look great. And I can be great.
Yeah.
And so we get a lot of repeat enrollment. And then kids are like, oh, well, I wrote a very funny, humorous book last time. This time I'm going to write an adventure story. And this time I'm going to write, you know, a drama or a, you know, a lot of our older kids, of course, start getting into the high school romance and things like that. So it's a great system. And I'm sure we're going to turn out some writers who eventually are going to get published once they get a little bit more older and established because they already know how to work with editors, and they work with us. They know how to be critiqued. They know tricks to get through writer's block, and all these things that they've absorbed. And I think that's what I always, you know, it always annoyed me as a kid that soccer players got all this structure and everything.
And I grew up in Canada, too, so it was hockey, you know. And
yeah, you're right. Well, here, yeah, we play hockey as well, of course, and hockey, but lots of soccer, too, right?
Yeah, right, right.
Lots of hockey, and like in lots of hockey, lots of soccer, and everything's very structured. There's coaches and tournaments. And
yes, and it progresses.
And it moves up, right? You keep pushing them up the level.
Yeah.
And I would say my co-founder of this program, he is quite a visionary, and he really believes in the ladder and pushing kids. Not pushing them, that's the wrong word, leading them up the ladder and saying, okay, now we should take, you know, he's really good at developing new types of classes, so as the kids progress through the program, they can repeat without doing the same thing, and they can be challenged in new ways.
Mm.
And, you know, it's great because now we've had kids who are going into the sixth year of the program.
Mm.
So I would have met them when they were 9 or 10, and now they're 15, 16.
Oh, wow.
And now we're developing all kinds of new programs. This year we're just starting one which is truly a writer's group, but for teens, where they're coming in and critiquing each other's work and developing stuff. They have a teacher. It's not me. They try to keep me away from teenagers. But they have, you know, a really great teacher who is working with them and mentoring them. And, you know, it's a great process, slowly letting her hands off them a little bit so that they can have a little bit more self-led mentoring. So it's just been a wonderful, wonderful program.
What a great, great gift for the community. I mean, we really need more people like you doing this work with kids.
Right. Well, I mean, I'm very proud of that program. I could talk for hours about it. So
yeah.
I could, you know, I'm very passionate about Kendra, but I can tell, you know, I really get going when I think about some of the stories that we've created with that program. And, you know, I do get to travel quite a bit and go to other towns throughout the U.S. and Canada to do workshops and things.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So I just get to share a little bit of that, but it's quite different here. It's kind of fun because I get to spend 15 weeks with one group of kids. And,
oh, yeah.
You know, any teacher will tell you that is when you get the best gold. So,
so your travels abroad and your international teaching audiences are obviously really responding well to your series and to your workshops.
Yeah, I think kids are kids all over the world. Like I go to Korea quite a bit. I've gone to England. And, you know, the kids are kids. They want to have fun. They are interested in good stories.
Yes. Yep.
At the bottom, you know, at the end of the day, they want a really good story.
Mm-hmm.
And
they'll let you know if it's
where
not.
You live.
Right.
Sorry?
And they'll let you know if it's not.
Oh, tell me about it.
So funny. Well, Lee, Mr. Wiz, our time is coming to an end here. I just wanted to mention your websites once again, KendraCandlestar.com for your books, and then your personal site is Lee Foti.
Correct.com.
Well, I want to thank you. I mean, I can't believe how quick our time has gone
by today.
I know. Well, did you have any final thoughts you wanted to just squeeze in before we let you go?
No, I'm just, you know, I mean, I guess now I'm feeling a little bit thinking about all these things about teaching and everything. So I just encourage every parent out there to, you know, let your kids read, and even if you think they're reading below their level or if they're really interested in a good story, I don't know, just encourage them. I always read everything when I was a kid, and sometimes I read below my level because I was interested in emulating those authors.
Oh.
So, you know, I don't know, just nurture that and give your kids support in reading and writing, and don't tell them that writing is hard to make a living in things, because I can do it. So, so many wonderful things that can come out of writing and reading and storytelling.
And if the passion's there, everything will follow.
I think if your passion's there, just the world has to get out of the way because nothing's going to stop you.
No. Great final thoughts. Lee, thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
Take care.
Okay.
All right, listeners, that's been Lee Edward Foti. He is the author and illustrator of The Chronicles of Kendra Candlestar, the award-winning series that includes The Box of Whispers, The Door to Unger, and his new installment, The Shard from Grieve. And these really are fantastic books, and really you can get a little glimpse on Lee's website, Kendra Candlestar. He's got some great, just some great video up there, and it really is a fantastic site, so do check it out. And get your kids to check it out, too. Well, I want to thank you once again for tuning in to Inside Scoop Live. I'm Juanita Watson. And until next time.